Yeah, this is a song about lunch meat. Lunch meat. I saw it on the back of a magazine. Lunch meat. It's a special treat for you and me. Lunch meat. Make sure you know where it comes from. Lunch meat. Because you don't want to eat nothing you hadn't planned on. Lunch meat, yeah, baby. Put it on some bread, add a little cheese, slather it with condiments, and you'll be so happy.
Hi, everybody. This is Kate Manchester. I'm the publisher of Edible Santa Fe and member of Edible Communities, and you're listening to the Edible Community Show on Heritage Radio Network. We'd like to thank our sponsor today, Hearst Ranch. Edible Communities, Inc. Is a community-based local foods publication, and we show up in distinct culinary regions throughout the United States and Canada. We connect consumers with family farmers, growers, chefs, food artisans of all kinds, and we believe that every person has the right to affordable, fresh, healthful food on a daily basis. We are a for-profit, member-driven corp. Come visit us at ediblecommunities.com and find the edible in your community. Today, we are going to be talking about school lunch. This is a big topic this fall, and partly because the CDC has stated that children born in the year 2000, one out of every three Caucasians and one out of every two African Americans and Hispanics will contract diabetes in their lifetime. So the result is the first generation in our country's history to die at a younger age than their parents. The Child Nutrition Act is something that was signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson in 1966, and the act was created as a result of the years of cumulative successful experience under the National School Lunch Program to help meet the nutritional needs of children. And about every 5 years, this comes up for renewal, and this fall, the Child Nutrition Act is coming up for renewal. And there are a couple of different pieces to this Child Nutrition Act. First of all, the school lunch program feeds something like 30.5 million children every day. And the school breakfast program feeds another, I believe it's 10 million. They're both permanently authorized. However, there are other child nutrition programs that affect school nutrition that need to be reauthorized every 5 years, and this is what's happening this year. So Congress will take up the Child Nutrition Act as soon as October, and this has a lot to do with this year's focus on school food, so you're going to be hearing a lot about it in the next few weeks. More than 77% of the 1,200 school food service directors surveyed state that the funding and cost of food and food preparation are the most pressing issues facing cafeteria programs nationwide as they head back to school this fall. And according to the results released in the School Nutrition Association's School Nutrition Operations Report, they did a report called The State of School Nutrition in 2009, nearly 60% of the districts increased their school lunch prices this year to keep up with the cost of preparation. That's the good news. So as families are struggling in the economy, survey results show there is an increase in free and reduced meal program participation across every grade. And this is an increase since 2005, so they're really beginning to see some good things happen. It's not all doom and gloom out there. So this fall, Congress will be working with the School Nutrition Association to advocate that school food service programs receive an additional 35 cents for each reimbursable meal served. Currently, they're at about $2.57 for each free school lunch meal, and they cost an average of $2.92 to produce, so of course there's a deficit. So the increase would help programs keep pace with rising costs, but also help to provide healthier and more nutritious foods. So this is a really pressing issue. Breakfast is served in more than 96% of the districts with traditional cafeterias in our country, grab and go and a la carte menus being the most popular forms of service, because we know a lot of kids come to school on an empty stomach. They don't get breakfast at home. After-school snack and summer food service programs remain popular. They're about 51% of the population served, by these programs throughout our country. And many school districts are now facing significant financial challenges, as we all know. So school nutrition directors are starting to get creative about alternative ways to raise funds. And about 75% of these districts provide catering services for events within their schools. Another 27% offer catering outside of schools. But this is all to raise money for school lunch. So Congress is going to take up this act in October. And let's see, today we're going to be talking with two people that are really heavily involved in school lunch. And the first is Susan Levin. And Susan Levin is a registered dietitian. She's also the director of nutrition education for PCRM, which is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're a nonprofit health organization that promotes preventative medicine. They conduct clinical research and encourage higher standards for ethics and effectiveness in research. They are sponsoring the Healthy School Lunch Campaign, which is dedicated to improving the food service to children in schools by educating government and school officials, food service workers, parents, and others about the food choices best able to promote children's current and long-term health. So Susan's going to talk to us today about a lot of the work that they do on the Hill there in Washington. And as a registered dietitian, it turns out she does lots of lobbying for school lunches and the school nutrition program. We're also going to be talking to one of my favorite people. She is the Renegade Lunch Lady. Her name is Chef Ann Cooper, and she's the current director of nutrition services for the Boulder Valley School District in Colorado. And you may know a little bit about Ann. She's been an advocate for kids and food for a very long time. She's the former director of nutrition services in Berkeley, where she was hired by the Chez Panisse Foundation to transform school lunches. And as director of Berkeley school system, which was 16 schools, 9,000 students, she basically found that the school's food service had completely retreated from actual cooking, that 100% of the food arrived in plastic, was reheated in plastic, and served to the kids in plastic. So she set about to make some changes. And with some ridiculous budget constraints and severely limited cooking infrastructure, she was able to really turn it around. She wound up managing to serve fresh and made from scratch meals from a lot of commodity foods, and now she's moved on to Berkeley to transform their school system. Ann is a prolific advocate and writer. She is the author of a book called Lunch Lessons, Changing the Way We Feed Our Children. She also wrote a book called In Mother's Kitchen, Celebrating Women Chefs, and They Share Beloved Family Recipes. She's the author of Bitter Harvest, A Chef's Perspective on the Hidden Dangers of the Food We Eat and What You Can Do About It, and A Woman's Places in the Kitchen, The Evolution of Women's Chefs. So we're really looking forward to talking to both Ann and Susan today. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back with Susan Levin. Manchester with Edible Communities, and we're back. And we'd like to thank our sponsor today, Hearst Ranch, for making this show possible. And we're back with Susan Levin. Susan is the Director of Nutrition Education for PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And she is working to help transform our school lunch program, and they are sponsors of the Healthy School Lunch Campaign. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Good. Well, we would like to know a little bit about the work that you do around healthy school lunch, and I've given folks a bit of a background on the Child Nutrition Act and how it's coming up, or pieces of it are coming up for renewal in October. And so what are some of the things that you guys are working on and focusing on and that you feel are important changes that need to be made?
Yeah, well, in general, we want to see the food that's served to be healthier, and we think that this falls greatly on the shoulders of the government. So we are working a lot trying to get things to change on that level, on the federal level. But we also work with schools directly, food service directors, parents, kids, and try to get some changes done at a grassroots level as well.
So when you say you're working with parents, I mean, one of the things that I discovered in doing research about around school lunch is that, A, of course there's not enough money available or less available than probably any time, you know, in the history of this program. And what are some of the things that people are doing, parents in particular, outside of this program to raise money for school lunches?
Well, that's a good question. For one thing, we like to emphasize with the food service directors, and what we've proven by working with food service directors, is that you don't necessarily need more money in order to have healthier options available. So we say that because, well, it's true. There are foods available to school lunches through the National School Lunch Program that are healthier that they could be choosing, like, say, for example, beans instead of chicken nuggets as a protein source. So we can show schools how to go through, say, their commodity list of foods and choose better things for kids. And then we give them recipes so that they can that have been tested so that we know kids like these recipes. You can use these healthier food options, and it's not going to cost you a dime more. And we can show them that kids actually like them. And to them, that means they purchase them, so they're not going to lose money by offering these foods either. So we do want to stress that it's not that we think every school needs to have a farm-to-school program ready to go next week, because that's a much bigger picture issue. We want them to know that they could do these things right away at no cost to them. And then, yeah, there's some bigger things that parents and food service workers and representatives, whether in the state or on the federal level, need to do in order to make the system better in general. But we want people to understand that these things could happen right now.
So you're talking about working within the actual school budget, so without even adding any more money, just changing out some of those commodity foods for other foods that are just healthier choices?
That's right. And that can be done, and we have done that with schools. For example, there's schools here in Washington, D.C., where I am, that would be considered operating within low-income areas. But we've shown them, and they've shown us how they can do it with the commodity foods that they can get. And we just say, you know what, if you bought black beans, that's pretty cheap. We can show you how to make a burrito or a bean taco that kids are going to love. And we do that, and that's great. Now, yeah, there are other things we'd like to see happen, fresher foods, local farmers providing foods for schools, gardens at schools, all that would be great. And we are working on that with some schools, but we don't want every school to think that they have to be connected to a garden in order to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the farm-to-school programs across the country?
I know very little. I know that we have some information on our website about schools that do successfully work in that program, and that's great. And we've even heard of some organizations that have like schools, might be operating within very confined budgets, but they get local farmers to help them out, and some schools have chosen that option as well. And I think that's more, kind of a the school kind of has to work on that by themselves.
Right,
there's
right,
not a lot
right.
of government help there. But, yeah, if you can get into a program like that, that's great.
So, well, let's talk a little bit more about what you guys do and this Healthy School Lunches. This program is actually part of PCRM and part of what you guys do. Tell us a little bit more about the way, just more of what you do and how this all came about. And
okay. Yeah, well, it came about because we do a lot of lobbying on the Hill where we ask people in Congress to work towards things that we find more favorable to schools and school lunches based on what's coming up. For example, the Farm Bill came and went a while ago, and we tried to get some changes implemented in the Farm Bill that would be productive for kids and school lunches.
What kinds of changes?
Well, big picture would be less money going towards multi-million-dollar corporations, which, are quote-unquote farmers. They're not the kind of farmers you...
Are we talking big agriculture? Is that
very big? Yeah.
Okay.
They get our tax dollars to overproduce foods, and then the surpluses are bought up and dumped into schools. And we are saying that's outrageous. That money could go into programs like farm to school, where you're, instead of dumping millions and millions of dollars into big agriculture, why not give it to farmers? Not that small farmers necessarily want to be part of a government program like that, but why not use that money to, you know, they always say we don't have enough money to give to schools to have better lunches. It's like, well, you do have that money. It's just going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. It's going to big business, big agriculture, and it's buying up some of the worst possible foods for kids, and then, or anybody, but that's purchased for kids and then dumped into schools. And what's so incredibly ironic about all of this is that the USDA created because its priority is to support agriculture. That's its job. That's why it's there. And then somehow they got into the business of writing dietary guidelines and making nutritional recommendations. The Food Guide Pyramid is a USDA product. And what they do is they don't even take their own advice. They flip that pyramid upside down. Everything that's supposed to be limited is what's getting dumped the most into schools. So what we're saying is follow your own advice or get out of the health advice business and give that over to, say, the CDC or NIH or the Department of Health solely, because it's a complete conflict of interest. And that's very apparent by if you look at a school lunch tray. Like, what is this mess? Well, it's just a bunch of surplus foods that was very cheap for the school because the USDA is under a contract to buy it up.
Okay, so let's stop right there because I want to ask you, for those of us that don't have children in the school system, what are kids getting? I mean, what are we trying to change here exactly? Like, what's a typical school lunch look like?
Well, it probably isn't so different than what you remember if you went to a public school, which I did, so I remember what they looked like. I wouldn't eat them after I became more aware of food and what food is supposed to be doing, which is fueling you in a healthy manner. But what they are, unfortunately, is usually very high in fat, mm-hmm. and the USDA itself does audits on school lunches, and so essentially they're auditing themselves, and more than 80% of the schools that they audited were over the fat amount that they were supposed to have on their tray. Now, it's already pretty lenient, in my opinion. Like, it can be 30% of your calories from fat, mm-hmm. but 80% or more of those schools were even over that amount. And you get, you know, the schools, what happens? School gets a slap on the hand and like, well, don't do that, right? And then they don't even have fiber requirements. And fiber is one of the most deficient nutrients in any American's diet because it comes from whole grain.
So in other words, the USDA doesn't have to put fiber in a school lunch?
Technically, no.
Okay.
Which is pretty incredible, and that's one of the things we'd like to see implemented in the next legislation that we're interested in, the next what's called the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act
right.
is coming up It's been coming up for a while, and it keeps getting pushed because of a lot of other things that are happening with the new administration. But it, we would love to see changes in there that said you need a minimum amount of fiber. You need less fat than you're already saying, but they can't even seem to stick to that one, which isn't very good. Less saturated fat on the tray would be great too. And then the schools that actually abide by those rules and do better than what the USDA is even asking should be rewarded with more money so that they can continue to operate in such
work.
A positive direction.
Right. So is there a chance, I mean, is this a pipe dream, or is this something that's actually doable to sort of disconnect? I mean, it seems like there's a very unhealthy relationship between the USDA and school lunches because of the USDA's relationship and contracts with big agriculture. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, and I don't even think, but it's, I feel like having talked to people on the Hill, it's something that we all acknowledge, like, yeah, that'll never happen. But I'm not sure. You know, I hate to say that because I feel like a lot of the best things that have ever happened in this country were people, you know, happened after people said, well, that'll never happen. So,
well, I also think that, again, you know, in just doing the research to talk to you and to Ann Cooper today, it sounds like things are changing. And it may be in pockets, but it sounds like there's some really positive change happening.
I think that's right. I think it's what's a little unfortunate is all that change, most of the change seems to be happening in more financially well-off areas.
Mm-hmm.
That's a start. I mean, it's a start, but I think what needs to happen is that this shouldn't be a benefit of
a wealthy school or a wealthy school district.
Exactly. This should be, and if we have the government pouring so much money into big agriculture, we know there's money. They need to be redirecting that money somewhere else in a more positive way, like towards high-fiber foods, and whether it be farmers that want to be subsidized, although I'm not sure how many do, or just towards programs that buy up more fruits and vegetables from local farmers or plant mm-hmm. gardens. And that should be, as far as I'm concerned, that should be every school that participates in the National School Lunch Program. The government should be taking care of those kids, not big business.
So I guess your perspective is also different. I mean, we're going to be talking to two different people today. We're talking to you, and then we're talking with Ann Cooper,
okay.
who has a very different perspective, you know, doing what she does. But you are really in the trenches, and you're up there, you know, you're a dietitian, you're a nutritionist, you're up there on the Hill lobbying for this. So you're really in the trenches, and you see the difficulties and the, I guess, the web of interrelationships and relationships that are already in place, you know, perfect example, the USDA and big agriculture. And is there really a possibility of disassociating them, you know, and giving the school lunch or Child Nutrition Act to somebody else to oversee?
Well, I don't know about that, and I don't even necessarily, I mean, that makes, it's sort of common sense to me. Like, this should be up to the Department of Health, or this should be up to the National Institutes of Health, not the USDA, however.
Well, and let's stop right there for a second, because the obesity numbers in this country. Okay, so the fact that one in three kids born mm-hmm. in 2000 are going to suffer from obesity and diabetes, that's a huge number. Why isn't the National Institute of Health, why isn't this their problem? The obesity and the diabetes obviously are their problem. Why is there a disconnect between, you know, what kids are eating every day for breakfast and lunch, you know, in school, and their health?
I don't know how much of a disconnect there is. I go listen to these open discussions. Right now, the dietary guidelines are being rewritten as they are every 5 years, and they have these open forums where these scientists talk about what they're looking at and what they're trying to do, and they're very smart people, very capable people, but I do think there's some, they know what kind of role diet plays in what's happening in terms of obesity and overweight and chronic disease. But I do think there is a bit of hesitation on doing anything too, quote-unquote, radical. Like, oh, well, we don't want to scare people. And I felt like in these things, standing up in these giant auditoriums and saying, no, you need to scare people. This is scary stuff. And this tiptoeing around everything and, well, let's just say eat a little more fiber and eat a little less fat. But that's kind of how the conservative way that I feel like they've been approaching the dietary guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not working. And I wanted to say, like, you guys meet every 5 years, very top-notch scientists, every 5 years. And if you were to graph that next to obesity and overweight, kids or adults, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, every 5 years we'd be in a worse position. I suggest you reevaluate how you approach this, because something really radical needs to happen. The status quo isn't working anymore. It never did.
Well, especially since, you know, this is the first generation of kids that probably are going to have a shorter lifespan than their parents because of obesity and because of diabetes. I mean, that's pretty shocking to me.
Oh, yeah. And even when I was in grad school for nutrition, you didn't say kids were overweight or obese. It didn't exist. It was non-existent terminology for kids. They were, you know, above the percentile and below this percentile, but not overweight or obese. And now I actually have a study sitting on my desk right now that's referring to children as not only severely obese, but morbidly obese. This is happening so quickly that I just don't think there's enough. But I'm afraid that people are just going to have their wits scared out of them in order to do anything drastic, including the USDA. I think eventually they will come around, and I do think it's because people like Ann Cooper will prove that you don't have to be, you know, a Looney Tune out there doing this stuff, that she actually makes sense. And as long as she keeps getting positive media, which for the most part she does, they will start to see, like, oh, this isn't crazy or radical. This is just decent food for kids.
Right. You know, there was a piece in the Times actually a couple of weeks ago called Stars Aligning on School Lunches, and I think it was August 19th or something.
Yeah.
And one of the quotes from Anne is, all of a sudden I'm not the fringe idiot trying to get everyone to serve peas and carrots that don't come out of a can. Like, that's the most radical idea they've ever heard of.
Right.
You know? And yeah.
She's that's absolutely right. And I think Dr. Dean Ornish, who's out in San Francisco, who did the work with heart disease and how diet can reverse
and
heart disease.
And reversing heart disease, actually reversing it through diet.
Exactly. Never heard of, never discussed until he did that research. And people say, well, that's too radical, people eating a low-fat, plant-based diet. He's like, no. Cutting an artery out of your leg, breaking open your chest.
Not only that, let's talk about radical. How about sawing your chest open?
Right.
You know, sawing your bones open so that you can get inside and fix your diseased heart. That's
right.
Radical.
I know, and that's
radical.
His point was amazing, and I want nutrition to stop being referred to as alternative care. It's like, no. We are the fundamental first line of defense in disease prevention, and even in some cases care, like Ornish proved with his study. First, change your lifestyle. Then, you know, you can go down the line with medications and surgery and all this. But we are not alternative to want healthy food for kids.
That's right. And that's where it begins. It really, really begins there. And so much of, you know, I mean, a lot of it is educating parents. Very often children educate their parents when they come home and tell them what they learned in school. And learning healthy nutrition and healthy habits in school should be where it begins.
Exactly.
It's part of our responsibility to kids.
Yeah, and I've heard great stories from where they do have gardens at schools and the kids grow okra, and then they watch someone in the kitchen cook okra, and then they go home, and guess what? Mom, buy
they
some
like okra.
Okra.
They tasted okra.
That's right.
I know there are a lot of people getting involved. I know Slow Food is getting involved with their Time for Lunch campaign.
Mm-hmm.
People, if you want to go visit and get more information, you can go to www.healthyschoollunches.org. healthyschoolcampaign.org, and you can learn more about the campaign updates and the Healthy School Lunch campaign and all of that. So, Susan, I want to thank you for joining us today and for all the good work that you're doing up there. I know, you know, it sometimes feels like you're pushing a rock uphill, but we're glad that you're up there doing this kind of work for us.
And well, thank you, and thank you for your show.
Kids.
Thank you.
Keep us updated. We'd love to, you know, just let more people know what's happening when the bill actually does come up and see what kind of changes are made. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Great. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Ann Cooper. Manchester with Heritage Radio Network and Edible Communities. And we are back with Ann Cooper, the Renegade Lunch Lady. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So I gave people a little bit of background on your bio and also, you know, on this whole School Nutrition Act and the Childhood Nutrition Act that's coming up, and pieces of it are coming up for renewal. And we talked to Susan Levin about the Healthy School Lunch Program. And I wanted to talk to you about the work that you've been doing, because you are actually kind of working, you're working within the system, but you're kind of not really on the policy side of things. You're working directly with school systems. And I guess, you know, this kind of activism has been in your bones for a long time, but I wanted to start with working at Berkeley and how you were able to transform and what you actually did there.
Well, at the Berkeley Unified School District, and I was the director there for almost 4 years, and that ended the end of June this year. We took typically bad school food. When I got to Berkeley, there was a rotating menu of chicken nuggets, extremo burritos, grilled cheese sandwiches, pizza pockets, and corn dogs. That's what we were feeding the kids in Berkeley, California 4 years ago. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable. And by the time we had got through 4.5 years and I had left, we had salad bars in every school, no more processed foods, no trans fats, no high fructose corn syrup, all whole grains, only organic milk at lunch, universal breakfast in every school. It was really great food cooked from scratch, lots of fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, and whole grains.
So how did you do it? Were you using the budget that was in place, or were you spending more money?
Initially, we spent more money to grow the program. So we raised money through foundation support and community groups, and we used that money to buy equipment, to train, to really help grow and innovate the department. And then, and now the department is self-sustaining, because one of the things you have to do is really raise participation. So we went from about 700,000 meals to about 1.5 million meals. This is per year. So we more than doubled. We did 2.5 times as many meals in 3.5 years. So we really grew the program, and that in growing the program, as long as you can keep your payroll relatively stable, you really can start to bring in more money to put into good food.
So I remember talking to you a while back, just maybe a year or two ago, and you were talking about that you were actually using some of the commodity foods that were available, but instead of that you were actually cooking things from scratch instead of, you know, using them kind of prepackaged. So maybe instead of chicken nuggets, you were asking them for whole chickens or chicken parts or things like that. Was that part of what you did?
Absolutely, absolutely. So most school districts, or many, use commodity foods, and they use pre-prepared commodity foods. In fact, in Berkeley, those chicken nuggets, extremo burritos, pizza pockets, and grilled cheese sandwiches were all part of the commodity food program, or made from commodity products. So instead of having cheese and flour made into grilled cheese sandwiches, we would get our own cheese and make grilled cheese sandwiches from good bread. And instead of having the chicken made into chicken nuggets, we would take the raw chicken and cook the raw chicken. So in essence, you have a much better, you know, a much better flavored food, you have a much less highly processed food, and you have a healthier product.
So now you are with the where is it?
Boulder,
you're in Colorado.
I'm in Boulder now. So I became the Director of Nutrition Services for Boulder Valley School District July 1 of this year.
Okay, and are they asking you to do the same thing in their school district?
Yes, they are. And in fact, we are on our fourth day of having 50 schools open with our new menus and new food, and it's slightly bumpy, but we're moving through it, and we've got kids eating, and, you know, it's good.
Is it the same process, Anne? I mean, did you have to raise some initial funds? Because, I mean, I assume that you're replicating what you did in Berkeley. So now that you're in Colorado, I mean, is there more infrastructure in place, or are you really recreating the wheel pretty much again there?
A little of both. We are raising money. Our budget to raise this year was $750,000, and we have pledges for $400,000 already. So we're on our way to having raised the money we need. And we've really been able to stand on the lessons learned in Berkeley. That really helped us. But a lot of stuff still has to be done here. I was just looking at the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars of smallwares that's in the back that we just ordered, because, you know, we didn't have everything we needed for the salad bars, or didn't have the equipment we needed to serve real food or to cook real food. So we're working through all of that now.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, and so in many ways, it's not recreating the wheel, but the same wheel has to turn slowly from the beginning to the end.
Right, right. So how long were you in Berkeley again?
3.5 years.
2.5 years?
3.5.
3.5 years. That's extraordinary. So it's basically, you know, it's going there. And I understand the, you know, getting more people to participate, because I understand the dollars and cents part of it. Is it costing them more money, or it's self-sustaining now?
Berkeley's self-sustaining now.
Wow. So, and you're going to attempt to try to do the same thing here in Colorado. I have no doubts that you will.
We certainly hope so. That's our plan. Self-sustaining in 3 years.
So I know when I was talking with Susan before, she, you know, again, she's on the policy side of things. She does a lot of lobbying on the Hill, and you know, she's dealing with the USDA and you know, all the struggles and laments with the big agriculture and the relationship in the USDA. You seem to have taken sort of a back door and decided that you're not going to mess around with that, that you're actually just going to go and do this stuff. So how does a school system, I know people know about you because I know the work that you've done in Berkeley is so extraordinary, not to mention all of the writing and everything else that you've, but people know who you are and they know what you're doing. So, I mean, do you have another school district lined up after Colorado?
Well, here's the deal. I don't think that I can change the world, which is what I'm setting out to do here. I'm changing the world. In my perfect world, I would help with my team. Together, we would change the face of school food in America. And we would do this supporting school nutrition services people all across the country, working on the policy side to get more money, to raise the nutritional guidelines, so chicken nuggets, tater tots, chocolate milk, and canned food cocktail would not be a reimbursable meal. But the way I want to do that in the future is not one school district at a time. I'm 55. I'm not going to live long enough to do the 11,000 school districts across the country. But what I'm doing now, I have a foundation, and the foundation has just launched a new web portal called The Lunchbox. And in The Lunchbox, and that website is thelunchbox.org, are tools to help all schools, and from menus and recipes and HACCP manuals and training guidelines and videos, and we're just starting. The site's only been up 2 weeks. But really, the next thing I'd like to do is be able to take all the tools and all the lessons learned from myself and all the other people who have been doing this for a while, get it out there in the public domain, have it be free, and really have a way for school districts all across the country to start to make their own changes one step at a time.
I think that's fantastic, because I do think that it's possible, and once you've done it in one place, and now, you know, you've got it, you'll have two back-to-back, I mean, this should be something that can be replicated, you know, across the country. Now, when you say you're out there raising money, you're raising money through private donors and foundation money?
For the lunchbox?
Mm-hmm.
Or for the school district?
Well, for the school lunches, for what you're doing in Colorado right now, if you need $700,000 or something.
The school district is raising money in a number of different ways. It's partnered with Whole Foods regionally,
mm-hmm.
and so regionally Whole Foods has pledged $100,000. There's some local foundations that have pledged money, and then we also have founding families who have themselves pledged money. So it's a very grassroots local campaign.
So are you also doing do you guys do school breakfast also?
We are doing breakfast. In Berkeley, we did universal breakfast every school, mm-hmm. every day, every classroom. We only have universal breakfast in 3 of our schools right now, and I think we will move that forward into some of the most at-risk schools as the year and years go forward.
And universal breakfast means everybody gets it?
That's correct.
So there's no child left behind for breakfast?
That's correct.
That's fantastic. What do you serve for breakfast?
You know, we have a rotating menu. We serve granola, organic granola one day with yogurt. We have other organic cereals. We have a local company makes us a whole wheat bagel that we serve. Sometimes we serve cheese. We serve hormone and antibiotic-free milk. We serve fresh fruit almost every day. So
because you've got lots of organic stuff and organic milk, are you able to get this, I mean, from the people that you buy, you know, all your school lunch supplies from? Is that who are you getting all this from?
Well, you know, we've changed all our suppliers, and we're purchasing more like a multi-unit restaurant than we are a school district. So we're still buying from some mainstream distributors, but instead of buying from the distributors that distribute the traditional traditional highly processed sort of low-end foods, we're really buying as high a quality as we can afford, but from some new and different purveyors.
Interesting. So this is actually a completely different model. So you're not necessarily buying the USDA commodity foods anymore. You're buying
Well, we still are using some, and as I said, it's most of it's raw product. So, for instance, we got a tremendous amount of commodity cheese, and some of that cheese is going on to pizza that's being made for us. We are doing pizza, 51% whole grain crust, low-fat mozzarella. So we are doing some things like that, but we're not having any of the commodities made into something like a chicken nugget.
Right. And I love that you're kind of rewriting the plan and not waiting for somebody else to do it for you. One of the things that I was talking to Susan Levin about is she said that currently, you know, with the USDA school, USDA being involved in school lunches, there's no requirement for fiber in school lunches. And they're generally 30% more fat than, so you're kind of rewriting the rule book here on the back end.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard. You know, I mean, it's hard to fit the USDA guidelines sometimes. So, I mean, it's hard to fit them because the calorie count, you know, one of the things that happens when you reduce sugar and you reduce fat is it's hard to hit the calories. And that's why many schools serve dessert, is to hit calories. It's crazy. Instead of saying...
Well, and that's also, it's a little bit, you know, counterintuitive and contraindicated given that, you know, one of our problems is obesity and diabetes.
Well, and the reason that much of that problem is that we haven't revised the guidelines in 15 years. You
that's
know?
What she. That's what Susan said.
So, we just really haven't looked at it in a long time.
So do you do, I mean, again, I get the sense that you're kind of, you know, doing this, you guys are on the ground actually changing the rules in the schools that you're working with and, you know, kind of working within the system but a little bit outside of the system and just kind of recreating a healthier version of that system. Do you... I mean, how much do you have to work within that system and work with the U.S. within the USDA guidelines?
Well, here, you know, the money comes from the USDA.
Right.
And they are pretty inflexible with their guidelines. So you have to find ways to work within the system, but be able to work within the system, hopefully making it as flexible as it can be for you, so that we can get the best food we want on the kids' plates. And really being very thoughtful about how you use the commodity products and getting, you know, the commodity products that are the most healthful possible, you know, is one of the ways we do that. But you can't walk away from it because that's where the money comes from.
Right, right. What kind of, let's talk about some of your menus. I mean, let's make a comparison. Susan was telling us, I'm actually looking, I'm on your website, thelunchbox.org, and there's a sort of a revised, or it's a different, it's not really a food pyramid, it's a kids' meal wheel. Let's talk a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Healthy Kids Meal Wheel is actually designed as a way to help kids, you know, really think about food in a different fashion. And one of the reasons we need to do that is if you look at the pyramid, you know, in my estimation, it's really hard to get kids to understand how to eat when you look at the pyramid. But the Healthy Kids Meal Wheel, which we've used in a lot of schools to help kids figure out what to eat, you know, it has this hamburger that's really teeny and vegetables that are really big. And it's kind of meant for a younger kid, a younger audience. But I think it's really sort of intuitive. And if you take, for instance, and you take your cursor over to the lean protein and click on it, a number of recipes will come up, like chicken tacos and oven-fried chicken and oven-fried fish and bolognese sauce with turkey and bolognese sauce with meat. So there's all kinds of recipes on here. And these recipes, many of them can be made with commodity product, but instead of having pre-made commodity product, you can take the commodity product that comes in a less processed form and make it into something like a chicken quesadilla.
This is great. This is really great. It's actually fantastic, and it's set up like a little plate, so you can kind of look at it with, you know, you can look at it and kind of figure out, okay, vegetables, 4 to 9 servings. That's a pretty big, that's vegetables and whole grains. That's half your plate right there.
That should be half your plate right there. That's
half
it.
Your plate. And I love the added sugars and fats, tiny little bits on your spoon and your knife over there. This is good. And then daily, this is the other piece of it too. What about the exercise piece? I don't know if you're involved in that at all.
Well, it's something that I really promote. I mean, that's why it's actually even on my meal wheel, right on my meal wheel. It's all about food.
I see that. Daily exercise, sleep, water, and fun.
Yeah, and I think that it's really important. I think that kids have to have exercise. We have to have recess. Recess has to be before lunch. You know, what, you know, just because we feed the kids better doesn't mean that, you know, we don't have to have exercise, and it's really important. And how quickly we got away from it. I mean, as a kid growing up, I remember we used to go to gym class, and there was their president's, you know, physical fitness, whatever. And, you know, all of a sudden we went from that to nobody walking, nobody riding bikes, nobody doing anything. So I think it's just really important that exercise is part of every child's day.
I agree. I know my mother's mantra when we were growing up was, go outside and play, you know, and that's what we did. We spent most, and we didn't come home until they whistled for us at dinner.
That's right, that's right. And they literally whistled.
They did. That's, we could hear my father's whistle all over that neighborhood. And do you have other schools? I know that you're working in Colorado right now, but are there other schools that are using your kind of your protocol and all of the tools that you've gathered sort of outside and doing it on their own right now?
Well, we've just opened up this website literally last week. It opened up on the really on the 17th, so it's only been open a week. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of school districts that have given us some real positive feedback on it. We're starting to get some districts ready to really start working with it, but I can't say as we have people that are really involved in it at this point. We're just starting.
Right, yeah. What about farm to school? Can you talk a little bit about farm to school?
Yeah, I'm really supportive of farm to school. I've worked with them for many years, both on a national level collaboratively and on a local level, working with them in different schools. I think farm to school is a great program. I think that it's underfunded. It's really hard to make it work sometimes because you're outside the school districts trying to make change as opposed to inside. Trying to make change, so I think it's hard. But I think it's really important. I'd love to see that really well-funded as a way to support both kids getting healthy food and farmers as an outlet for their food.
Hmm. And basically, farm to school, what we're talking about, farm to school is a national program, actually. It's not in every state, but it's in a lot of different states. And they are buying local produce, basically, to put in the schools.
Absolutely.
And we've got one here. We've got Lee Adams and Pam Roy are farm to school folks, and they're constantly working on the policy side of things, trying to get more fresh foods in our schools here in New Mexico. And so I know that farm to school is a program that it's, again, it's not in every state, but it's in a lot of states across the country.
Absolutely.
Well, I think this is great work. And anything, what's in the pipeline? I know you should talk a little bit and let people know what you're doing with Whole Foods. I just read a press release, but why don't you tell folks what you're doing with Whole Foods?
I'm honored to be participating collaboratively on a national campaign with Whole Foods in every store in the country. And what we're doing together is trying to elevate and educate people, elevate the challenges and educate people around what's going on with school food. So it's a national school lunch campaign. It's a school lunch revolution. There's videos. There's a website. There's in all of the stores, there's all kinds of information. There's videos that are looping. There's videos on their website. There's videos on my website. And they're also helping to raise money for the foundation and to not only build the lunchbox but help educate around the lunchbox as well in a bigger vein around the lunchbox project and how we can make these changes and getting information out there to schools so they can start doing it. So I'm really excited. We're doing this collaboration all of August and September. I'm actually going on tour with them. I'm going to be in Houston, Chicago, Nashville, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., New York, and Chicago.
Wow. That's pretty amazing.
And we're actively trying to raise money to be able to produce all of these tools to help schools all across the country.
This is incredible. I think that's fantastic. Well, Anne, I'm really happy about the work that you're doing, and Are you doing anything else? I know you've still got your website, Lunch Lessons, and or Chef Ann Cooper.
I have my website, which is chefann.com or lunchlessons.org. My foundation, Food Family Farming Foundation, foodfamilyfarming.org. And now we have the Lunchbox Project, the lunchbox.org. And so that's it. I've got 50 schools we're just opening here in Boulder. I've got the foundation running. I've got the Lunchbox Project working, the collaboration with Whole Foods. And that's enough for anyone at one time.
I was going to say, that's kind of, you know, that's enough for one human being. You must have lots and lots of great people helping you out, too, which is fantastic.
I do. I have a tremendous team. We have, I have a ED of my foundation, communications director. The Fresh Ideas Group is helping. I have a lot of wonderful people working on the foundation, my consulting company, and then 175 great people in Boulder trying to make this happen.
This is fantastic. What would you tell, if people want to get more involved or find out more information, where should they go?
TheLunchbox.org, and check back often every single day. We're updating, we're putting up new information, and we're really trying to make this a vibrant, vibrant site and community.
Fantastic. Anne, I want to thank you so much, and I want to wish you the best in your work. I'm really thrilled to see this work that you're doing.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night."
So this is Kate Manchester with Edible Communities and on Heritage Radio Network, and we've been talking about school lunch today. There are a couple of different places I'd love to have you check out if you're interested. www.healthyschoollunches.org. You can check out Ann Cooper's website, chefann.com, and also thelunchbox.org. That's www.thelunchbox.org. And you'll get all kinds of great information. And again, check back often on thelunchbox.org, but also check on Healthy School Lunches, healthyschoollunches.org, and find out, you know, what you can do in your own community to foster some of these changes that are going to be coming, or how you can make your voice heard. We'd like to thank Hearst Ranch for making this show possible today, and we'd like you to join us again every Monday at 5 o'clock New York time, Eastern Standard Time, or if you miss a show, find us on the web at heritageradionetwork.com and search under Edible Communities. And next week, we'll be back with Marla Camp and Deborah Shapiro, and we look forward to bringing you some more great food news next week. Thanks for tuning in.
My recipe for soul food. Give me some soul, Basie. A skinful of drums.